From Southern California, this is The Circle of Insight, a show about everything in psychology. Hear the latest in news and views on psychology. Our motto is simple. Wherever there is psychology involved, we are there. And now, here's your host of The Circle of Insight, Carlos Vasquez.
Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Today, we're going to be exploring an undercover agent's life. And boy, do we have some fascinating stories for you. The book is called The Last Undercover. The gentleman we're going to be speaking with is Bob Hamer. He's a 26-year veteran of the FBI, serving as a street agent many of those years in undercover capacity. He's also been a technical advisor for the Law & Order, SVU, and the Sleeper Cell. Welcome to the circle, Bob.
Thanks so much, Carlos, for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, part one was really fascinating. We got to hear a little bit about your book. We found out about your undercover operation with NAMBLA, which we did not give you the answer to. You're going to have to get the book. Today, we're going to talk more about some of the other undercover assignments you were doing or had done. And we'll learn a little bit towards the end where we can get a hold of some of your other wonderful books. I think you even wrote a book with Oliver North.
We have two books with Oliver North.
So we'll find out more about that as well towards the end. But first, I don't even know where to start. You had a lot of amazing undercover cases here. You were a contract killer?
Yeah, I've had a couple people hire me to kill targets that they had identified. Obviously, we didn't do it, but they thought we thought we did.
And here's a couple questions. We like to explore the mind here in human behavior. So how did you get yourself ready for that role? I mean, did you grow a goatee all of a sudden, try to get yourself feeling tougher, or what was that all about?
You know, it was easy for me to get in and out of roles. I don't know if there was, if my mind just allowed me to do that. You get yourself built up and you identify how you think you should be acting as a contract killer, what you should be saying. Throughout most of my career, I didn't sleep very well because I would spend most of my time at night rehearsing, okay, what if this person says this, or what if they do that? What if they find the gun on me? What am I supposed to say? What if they find the recording device? What am I going to say? How am I going to react? So a lot of times when I would get into a situation and something would come up that I had already rehearsed in my mind, so I came off more quickly, so I just came back at them, with the response that they bought. So contract killer, actually, it was a very easy role because you just played the tough guy. I mean, typically, unlike TV, I never played the Don Johnson Miami Vice guy where you get into somebody's face. You don't want the jury to think, oh my gosh, this guy sold the drugs to the undercover agent because he was afraid he was going to get killed if he didn't give him the drugs. I mean, more, you really would rather come off weaker so that it looks as though the target, the subject of your investigation, is the one that's doing the pressuring. So even as, say, a contract killer, you don't want to come off as, okay, now that you've met with me, you're going to have to pay me so I can kill this person. Otherwise, I'm going to kill you for not paying me. I mean, you understand what I'm saying.
Sounds very complicated. It's even more complicated for you now.
Yeah, it's just,
wow.
You want it to appear as though they are the driving force for this crime, not the government. You're not acting on behalf of the government as a driving force for this crime. It has to be the defendant, the target, the subject of your investigation that is the driving force.
Well, that makes it even more complicated for your undercover work, because now you have to do this other act almost make sure it gets
certainly
the case actually gets prosecuted.
Certainly, and I'm sure you've talked with other law enforcement officers that have gone undercover. It is difficult because you're trying to put together a prosecutable case. So it's a lot different than just gathering intelligence, because we're doing more than gathering intelligence in this investigation. We are trying to put together the elements of the offense. So that makes it much more difficult.
Now, I know one of the stories I've heard from you, I don't know if it's in one of your books or not, but you detailed how your career progressed from one level to another. You started with, I think, Chinese trafficking of cigarettes. And then it started progressing more and more into guns and drugs and all sorts of stuff, where we got into the Miami Vice-ish kind of mode. What did you do? Tell me a little bit more about that story with the Chinese trafficking of cigarettes. I thought that was really fascinating. I don't think anybody really knows about that one very much except for the Chinese.
Yeah, we were we'd initially began targeting the importation of counterfeit cigarettes into the United States, principally because, one, illegal goods were coming into the United States, but the money from that illegal goods was being used to fund terrorism overseas. So the FBI began looking at counterfeit cigarettes because they were filtered down to these mom-and-pop grocery stores that were using the profits to fund Hezbollah, Hamas, and other terrorist organizations. So that's why we initially got involved in the counterfeit cigarettes. But a lot of organizations, criminal organizations, are involved in more than just one thing. I mean, they may be involved in drugs, but they're also involved in guns. So
multiple sources of revenue?
Certainly.
Sounds like a corporation.
Well, in many ways they are. I mean, some organizations are loosely knit, others are extremely tight knit. So they have almost a chain of command that you would go through. In order for you to commit this crime, you have to get permission from this guy. So that happened in some of the organizations that we targeted. Mm-hmm. In this particular case, we started with the counterfeit cigarettes. Once the people that I was meeting with realized that I was capable of moving their counterfeit cigarettes, of transporting them from the West Coast to the East Coast, then they brought me drugs because they knew I was good with the cigarettes. My backstory was that I was dealing with other individuals throughout the country. One of them owned a bar, so one of the targets of our case brought me ecstasy and crystal meth, figuring that it could be moved through the bar. So we moved from cigarettes to drugs. Then once we got involved in drugs, weapons came up, and we began to discuss weapons. Once we got from the cigarettes to the drugs to the weapons, now we found out and we knew, but I was tasked with trying to come up with counterfeit $100 bills. North Korea counterfeits our $100 bill. It's called a supernote. And I was tasked with trying to get the North Korean supernote. Eventually, we purchased $2 million of the counterfeit supernote. And at one point, right before the case was taken down, North Korea was going to make me the exclusive distributor of the supernote in the United States. And they were going to give me $40
million.
Yeah. I can put that on my resume, huh?
Well, it's an amazing sales career. You went from selling
from cigarettes to counterfeit money.
For North Korea, for our country. Wow.
Hi. Welcome to Adelante. This is Adelante Recovery, and my name is Yvette Kuglin, and I'm part of the staff.
Adelante Recovery Center has helped people in dual diagnosis for 5 years. We accept most PPO insurances and provide luxury accommodations and 24-hour support. To speak with an admissions counselor, call 1-888-242-4450.
A lot of time, we don't even know what's wrong with us, and sometimes we need to get away to figure that out. So if you want to go for a little retreat out in Corona Del Mar, which is a confidential location, we're here to help. So we're only a phone call away. Thank you.
And was there a lot of money in that 100 note?
In the super note?
Yeah, was there a lot of money being made by North Korea in this process, or were they just trying to destabilize government? What was there?
No, there's a tremendous amount of money. I mean, the government, our government has no idea totally how much of the supernote is out there because
still doesn't.
It's because wow. It's so good, and because it's most of it is distributed overseas.
Now this is a little different question along the same theme, but looking at a psychological angle, you made a lot of money, kind of.
In my undercover capacity,
you couldn't make
not as an FBI agent.
Does that ever tempt any of the agents? If you're under that kind of cover, because that's a lot of money being handed back and forth. There's millions of dollars probably in a year.
Well, I think some people, obviously there have been undercover agents that have crossed over the line and done that. I think one of the things that, again, I'm not trying to harp on Hollywood, but almost every undercover agent in TV or the movies is a drug addict, he's an alcoholic, he's divorced. most of the successful undercover agents that I know were married for a long time. They are tethered to something, be it religion, be it to their family. You have to have something other than just the thrill of working undercover, or you can succumb to the temptation of crossing the line. My family was my tether to reality. We've talked about how I could play this role and then go home and be the husband and the father. Well, I looked forward to being those roles, and they were the ones that kept me grounded. Between my family and my religion, I stayed grounded.
I was gonna say, it has to be that way. If you don't, you're really going to be tempted by some of that stuff. You made a lot of money, and I remember that during those times. Whew, amazing stuff. For a few minutes we have left, there was one interesting story. Well, they're all interesting, but there was one that stood out for me. You had a nickname when you were doing undercover work for the racetrack. I still can't forget that story. It cracks me up. Do you mind sharing that a little bit with our audience?
We had an informant that identified a group of men that were fixing thoroughbred racehorses. The informant was afraid to actually introduce me, so I got into the group. Everybody had a nickname in the group. There was Jimmy the Mouth, Jimmy the Greek, Joe the Broom, David the Printer. My nickname as the undercover agent was Bob the Cop.
Because they knew you were a cop.
No, they didn't know, but someone says, well, how do you know he's not a cop? So it was always Bob. This is the guy Renee thinks is a cop, and it just got shortened to Bob the Cop. So,
how did that make you feel? Were you starting to sweat bullets when they said Bob the Cop for the first time?
I knew what was coming. I knew how they had arrived at this situation, but...
I had an EKG.
It actually made it a little more fun because...
Now, you mentioned something earlier in part one. I'm starting to come back to my memory right now. You carried a gun for some of these assignments?
Sometimes I did. If the undercover role called for me to carry a weapon, I would. I mean, when I was a NAMBLA member, I didn't carry a gun. If I were a drug dealer, I would carry a gun. When I went to the racetrack, I didn't carry a gun because people who go to racetracks in California don't carry guns because they don't have concealed weapons permits. So
did it make it worse or better for you? I mean, were you worried when you had the gun, like, oh my God, I hope they don't find this thing, it falls out like a Clouseau movie? Or did you...
Typically, if I was supposed to have a gun, I didn't worry about it. It was more like the day of the arrest, I would carry a gun in case I needed it. So then it was, I have to be careful they don't catch me before the arrest goes down.
Sure. Type of thing. Well, last two things. One thing is, we were mentioning earlier that there's an organization, that a lot of these groups run like an organization. Did you see any bureaucracy like you did in the FBI?
It was funny. Even low-level, the low-level street thugs I would deal with would complain about management. So sometimes we could sit there and I could commiserate with them because I had the same issues with my bosses as they were having with theirs.
That's great. Bob, thank you so much again for being on The Circle. If we can get more information, besides The Last Undercover, you have several other books. Here it is again. You have a lot of other books that you've written as well with Ollie North. Where can we get a hold of these books?
If you go to bobhamer.net, all the books are there with sample chapters, and you'll get a chance to see some of the other things that I've done.
Thank you again. Remember, bobhamer.net, bobhamer.net. Welcome. Thank you again, everyone, for joining us. It was a great show. I hope you had as much fun as I did. Remember, our motto is simple. Wherever there's psychology involved, we are there. We'll see you next time, everyone.